Welcome to The James Rice Show, a humorous, entertaining, and sometimes thought-provoking look at teaching and studying abroad. Join the conversation as James guides you through his experiences and provides insights into how to improve your English and how to improve your teaching of English. And now, here's the man you've been waiting for, James Rice.
Coming up on this week's episode, a project-based language school in Ireland is shaking up the ESL world. International students studying in the USA are on the decline. And what is the 2018 Word of the Year? All coming up on The James Rice Show. Welcome my class and my students and my teacher friends out there. Welcome to the James Rice Show for this week. I am here in Toronto, Canada with my lovely producer, Stephanie, in the glass booth over there. Hello, Stephanie. Give us a wave. Yeah, thank you so much. Stephanie says, hello. Broadcasting in over 60 countries worldwide. Wow. Thank you guys so much for your continued support. And what is happening in our number one country, our number one listeners, United States of America, the US of A? What is going on, guys, in the USA? The international student numbers have been released for higher education. Now, it is higher education, not necessarily language schools, but the decline is happening in the USA, just like in the UK, and we talked about the UK this past summer. In the USA, the number of international students declined by 6.6%. Yikes. Ouch. Now, I'm reading articles out there, and they're all saying, oh, it's Donald Trump, it's the Trump problem. And, you know, maybe it is. But I look at the numbers, and I read the report, and the report will be on the website, www.thejamesriceshow.com, and you'll be able to look at it on this episode and read the full report yourself. But I look at the numbers, and, you know, I just it doesn't add up to me that it's a Trump problem. It is a different problem. So let's take a look. 8.8% drop in graduate students from India. So almost 10% decline in India. Why? What's going on in India? Well, Canada here, our home country, you know, they've opened the doors to India, and it's much, much easier. And the government here is making it much, much easier for Indian students to get a visa and come and study in Canada. And, you know, it's going to affect other countries. And one of the countries, obviously, is the United States. Then there is a 15% decline for Saudi Arabian students. And you might think, oh, Saudi Arabia is in the news. Well, what really has happened is that, of course, the Saudi government has taken away their scholarships. And so it's a little more competitive to get those Saudi students to come to the different countries. So every country is seeing a decline from Saudi students. And then there's this big number, and this is where the Trump, you know, blaming Trump comes in, where it's 39% decline from Mexico. And you guys are like, what? 39%? It's Trump. It's build the wall. It's Trump. It's build the wall. And I say, well, it could be. Obviously, you know, Mexicans are not exactly happy with President Trump. But there is another angle, and that is that Mexican students, and we have many Mexican listeners out there, and Mexican students can get a visa to come to Canada for less than 6 months without any trouble. So a lot of the Mexican students are coming to Canada. They're checking out Canada, checking out countries and cities like Toronto, Vancouver, Montreal, and they're seeing the options. They're learning about what they could do in terms of going to college, maybe university, maybe a career college here, vocational college. And they're saying, you know what, I kind of like Canada and I'm staying here. And, you know, the visa situation is much more favorable for Mexicans to go to Canada than to go to the United States. So while it could be a Trump issue, it may not be wholly a Trump issue. And also, when I talk to students, one of the big concerns is safety. And, you know, the number of gun-related deaths and school shootings makes international students and international parents very nervous. And something else, and I talked about this in the summer with the UK decline, and I say it again, because UK was number two and they dropped to number three. Do you remember we had a podcast about that? USA was number one. USA is still number one. Number two is now Australia, and number three is UK. And number four, coming up fast, is Canada. So those are the top four destinations for international students. Now, I said back in the summer that the UK has to realize and has to understand that students have many, many choices. It's not just UK versus USA. Canada, Australia, Ireland, and we're going to talk to somebody today from Ireland, a school in Ireland. We're all doing great things out there. We're all doing interesting things, and it's options for students to consider. So the president of the group that put the report out, he stated, "We are hearing students have choices, and for the first time, we, the United States, we have competition." And well, that's what I've been saying. That's what I've been saying for the past 6-8 months. USA, UK, you guys got to up your game. You got to up your game because Australia, Canada, Ireland, Malta, you know, we had last week on a gentleman from Malta who's doing some amazing things there. I mean, there are some destinations that students are going, maybe it's a little more interesting than just going to the USA. So something to think about there for my USA friends. And we're going to talk to one of those interesting language school owners, David Ganley, from Ireland. He has created a project-based language school in Ireland. And he's coming up in our teacher talk section. So we're going to chat with him about that. And students, it's very cool language school that he's developing in Ireland. So hopefully to our American friends, you might get some ideas about how to help out your student numbers as well. We got to make some changes, and USA, UK, got to make some changes. Also coming up, we have the Word of the Year. The 2018 Word of the Year has been released by Oxford Dictionary, and we're going to take a look at that. And the runner-ups as well. So even if you know the Word of the Year, you know, like, James, I know the Word of the Year already. We're going to tell you who was like second place, third place, fourth place as well. So those words as well. Very cool. And those are actually a little bit more interesting than the actual Word of the Year. So stay tuned for that. Stephanie, what do we got here for our top five listeners? We didn't do that last week, Stephanie. Our top five listeners for this week. As I mentioned, number one, still the U.S. of A. Number two, our Brazilian friends, obrigada. Number three, Vietnam. Number four, New Zealand is still hanging in there, New Zealand. We love our Kiwis. And number five, making a return, finally, Canada. Canada is back on track. And of course, you can listen to the show on Apple's podcast. Please subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And also on Stitcher, on the Stitcher app, Android Stitcher app. It's a really cool app. It's starting to get a lot better out there and for podcasting. So if you're an Android user, download the Stitcher app, of course, to listen to my show, but other shows as well. And you'll find, of course, full episodes are released every Monday, and you can get the full episodes as well. So don't forget, also, teachers and students, we have our episode pages on our website, www.thejamesriceshow.com. So there's extra information that we put in those episode pages that I hope will help you to either learn or to learn more about the language industry or to learn more about teaching or to bring tools and ideas into your classroom. So I hope that will help as well. All right, so coming up next, we will have the idiom of the week.
The Study It textbooks are the first ever completely digital and interactive English as a Second Language textbook series. Once downloaded, these textbooks do not require a Wi-Fi connection. Students and teachers can use them anywhere, anytime. Used in over 40 schools, universities, and NGOs worldwide. Study It is the future of English teaching. Visit www.studyitbooks.com for more information.
It's time for James's Idiom of the Week.
So, when you travel, you often buy one of those guidebooks or download a guidebook app. And if you get these guidebooks, then you might read them in English, which is great. It's good English practice. In these books, you're going to see some travel idioms that are quite common. For example, peak season or high season, you know, that's the busiest time of the year. It's a little different in each country, but every country has a peak season or a high season. Festive season, that's when there are many festivals, like February in Brazil, there's a lot of festivals, the Carnival. Another idiom might be must-see place, and that's the place that is the absolute best in that country. Some must-see places that I've been to, Well, in Mexico, you have the sun and the moon periods, pyramids. That's must-see. That was very cool. Japan, saw a lot of great places. Hiroshima, maybe. That's just unbelievable. And here in Canada, of course, the Rocky Mountains. That's all must-see places. All right, so here are a few idioms related to travel that you might read in those guidebooks or on a guidebook app. Maybe these are not so common travel idioms. The first one, off the beaten track. Off the beaten track. And this means a hidden destination or a spot that is outside the tourist area. For example, when you go to Niagara Falls here in Canada, you should check out the whirlpools. Yeah, the whirlpools. They are off the beaten track, but well worth the visit. And that's true. You should check them out if you're in Canada. They're very cool. All right, next one. Travel light. Travel light. That's another common idiom, which means don't carry too many bags or too much luggage. So when you go to some destinations, you don't want to bring a lot of stuff. You want to travel light. And because of the many restrictions in Saudi Arabia, I had to travel light when I went there. I couldn't bring a lot of stuff into the country. So I had to leave it at home and travel light. Another idiom, go trekking. Go trekking. Now, trekking, it's like hiking, but, you know, not as heavy. Trekking is like, it's like taking a long walk through a difficult area or a long walk far from the city. So when I lived in Japan, we often went trekking through the mountains to find the different shrines. Also, very true story. You know, if you get to travel to Japan or Korea as well, because I've seen some great places there, trek through the mountains, because there's a lot of amazing things to see there. Next, we have a whistle-stop tour. A whistle-stop tour. Now, I'm not a fan of the whistle-stop tour. Basically, you jump on and off a bus to visit a place for 15 or 20 minutes. So many cities and countries, mostly in the cities, have whistle-stop tours. Now, I remember in Japan, I was on a whistle-stop tour in Kagoshima. Now, Kagoshima is very famous for a very, very big and active volcano called Sakurajima. And it's a really cool place. You know, it's one of those must-see places. So I got off that tour, and it was a Japanese tour, so I didn't know the language well at that time. And I stayed at the volcano because it was really amazing. And when I returned, the bus was gone. Bam! No more bus. Where's the bus? So I had to walk down the volcano. Luckily, some very nice Kagoshima farmers picked us up, and we went down the mountain and got to the ferry. So not a big fan of the whistle-stop tours, not a big fan. Another idiom, touristy. Touristy. This is used to describe a place that is full of tourists. And the local people, they don't go to this area. Times Square in New York, very touristy. Times Square is touristy. Local New Yorkers avoid
Times Square. Niagara Falls, sadly, in my country, is really touristy. The falls are beautiful, but the city is touristy. So, those are some idioms you may read in a guidebook or hear from the local people. And you can tell your new friends that, hey, I understand this idiom because I listen to the James Rice Show. And that is the idiom of the week.
Don't forget to follow James on Instagram at Connect with James for fun photos and updates on future episodes.
The word of the year has been announced by the Oxford Dictionary. The word of the year is a word or expression that has attracted a great deal of interest over the last year. And the Oxford word of the year for 2018 is... toxic. Toxic is the 2018 word of the year. The adjective toxic. And the meaning of toxic is defined as poisonous. Poison, so it's poisonous. And there has been a 45% rise in the number of times it has been used since 2017. So this year, more people have been using the word toxic than any other word out there in the English language. Now, it is an adjective, so it is used with a noun, and the top nouns it is used with were toxic chemicals. Toxic chemicals. Now, there were Russian spies that were killed in the United Kingdom with a toxic chemical, and no one knew what that chemical was, but they knew it was poison, and it was called a toxic chemical. So that was used a lot last year, or this year, I guess. We're still in 2018. Number two was toxic masculinity. Toxic masculinity. And it's men who are like, you know, they're too masculine, like top alpha males. You know, macho men, tough guys. Okay, so toxic masculinity. Another common noun that it was used with was toxic gas. Toxic gas, which is usually related to air pollution. Another one was toxic environment. Toxic environment. So it was like, toxic environment is like a bad workplace or a bad office. And of course, there was a lot of, you know, the Me Too movement and sexual harassment issues that went on. There's a lot of toxic environments going on in Hollywood, I can tell you that. And maybe Washington and politics and all of that stuff. So there's a lot of bad workplaces out there. Another one, last one, would be toxic relationship. Toxic relationship. So a bad relationship, a poisonous relationship. And again, with the Me Too movement, you have like Harvey Weinstein, you have Kevin Spacey, Charlie Rose, all of these guys, Roseanne, you know, they were pretty toxic people. And you know, there were toxic relationships with these celebrities around the Me Too movement, especially with that Weinstein guy there. So toxic is the word of the year for 2018. Now, there are some runner-ups to the word of the year. Okay, so runner-up means like, you know, second place, third place, fourth place, etc. And one of the words is a word that we have talked about here a lot on the James Rice Show since the Toronto van attack in the spring, and that word is incel. Incel. So that was a runner-up to the word of the year, toxic, and it jumped on to the English language world because of the van attack. And it's incel, if you guys remember, we talked about it. It's an online kind of subculture of men who can't attract women. And so there's this world called incels out there, and they're usually online. Another one was over-tourism. Yeah, and that means too many tourists in one area or one place or one city or perhaps it's a historical site, and they cause damage to that historical site, or they cause damage to the environment because there's just too many tourists. Over tourism, and that's a new kind of word out there, kind of like incels. And you know, places like Madrid, Venice, Thailand, they had some serious issues with over tourism. Interesting. The last runner-up is Tech Lash. Tech, like technology, Tech Lash. And this is this expression means kind of a negative feeling that people have to, you know, the power of technology and how that power is getting, you know, stronger and stronger with tech giants like Facebook, like Apple, like Google. And this year there's been, you know, a lot of Facebook privacy scandals where Facebook, you know, lets your information get out there into the public. And just the general hugeness of Facebook and Google, plus the addictiveness. So the need to always look at their screen and an increase in screen time that a lot of young people are having. And this kind of expression, Tech Lash, T-E-C-H, was created. Uh-huh, yeah. So, for a full list of the word of the year and the runners-up, I have it on my webpage, episode 47, so you can see the full list of runner-ups and other words. And it's if you're listening, it's a great one to bring into your class as well. A lot of fun to look at the words from 2018. All right, and coming up next, we have Teacher Talk and a very cool language school in Ireland.
Now it's time for Teacher Talk. James's thoughts and insights into teaching international students.
It is my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Mr. David Ganley, the founder of Future Learning Language School, and he has three centers in Dublin and one in the UK. Welcome, David.
Good afternoon, James. How are you?
Good, good. Now, David, you specialize in project-based learning, and I'm a huge fan of PBL. Can you tell me about your school and its methodology?
Yes. Well, I might just give you a little bit of background to why we started this particular type of project-based learning and technology-enhanced school, as we call it. I was a secondary school teacher in Ireland, which is the equivalent of a high school, for almost 10 years. Engineering and computer science were my specialist subject areas. I worked in the language school industry for almost 10 years, running summer schools during my summer time off. And what I noticed from the ESL industry is that there wasn't much differentiation when it came to the type of learning across the schools that I worked in. It was all very much general English. Where in my job as a secondary school teacher, I was responsible for the ICT in the school, and we had a large focus on pedagogy and training the teachers on how to use technology in the classroom. And that led to a lot of active learning, project-based learning, flipped classroom, technology-enhanced learning. So I decided 5 years ago that I wanted to start my own summer school, but the focus would be on teaching English to digital media. So what that led to was a project-based learning philosophy to our school, which we have developed over the last 5 years into, as you said, a number of summer schools, in Ireland, in the UK. We now have winter schools in China, and we're looking to open winter schools in other areas in Russia and in the Middle East as well. So with our approach to project-based learning, what we're noticing is that we are quite different to other schools in the way that we use technology as a tool at the core of all of our programs. And that is quite difficult to do. And I think it is one of the reasons why a lot of schools don't succeed in doing that. We, at the very outset, when we decided to take this approach with our particular school, we decided to stay true to it. So over the years, we would have been approached to do lots of different general English type courses, IELTS courses, Cambridge courses. But we have refused those type of courses because they don't fit with what we do with the technology enhanced and project-based learning. So over the last number of years, it's been very exciting. And as I spoke to you just before the show there, we can see that our business is going in different directions. And that is thanks to the niche that we have with the technology enhanced and project-based learning.
Yeah, now I do want to talk about that. But some people say, you know, David, all you're doing is just kind of a different project every day. They're not really learning grammar. You know, they're not going to be able to pass the IELTS to go to university. What do you say to critics who say something like that?
Yeah, well, it has to fit with what you do. And I suppose you have to understand that the type of programs that we offer. The type of programs that we currently offer are short-term programs. So our summer programs would be no more than students on average would come for 3 weeks. Nobody would generally come for more than 4 weeks. Another big part of our business now in the last 2 years has been the mini stay. The mini stay in Europe, I'm not sure if all of your listeners are familiar with that term, but in Europe, that's very popular. It's a 4, 5, 6, or 7 night stay for European students who would come on a school tour. So the primary markets for us are France, Spain, Italy, Finland, and Germany, and Russia. So those students would come to Ireland, they would do English lessons in the morning, and they would do activities then in the afternoon. So for those two particular programs, the summer and mini stays, they like and they want the project-based learning. These students in Europe have got improved levels of English. They don't want to come to Ireland or the UK and do general English. They're already using these books. They're learning the same grammar in class. They want to get something that they can touch, something that they can feel, something that they can relate the real experience to. So project-based learning really allows them to do that. But on top of that, you also have to have the correct staff, the correct infrastructure, choose the correct technology, choose the correct software. So where critics would say the technology does not work, well, what I would say is, first of all, in order to prove our critics wrong, we had to prove that this works. And in order to do that, we went and got EQUALS accreditation. I'm sure a lot of your listeners would be familiar with EQUALS, which is one of the highest standards of worldwide accreditation you could get in the language industry. Now, it did take us 3 years to get that accreditation. And the reason it took us 3 years is because the first year they didn't really know what they were coming to pre-inspect. Technology enhanced learning.
I'm sure.
Yes, technology enhanced learning and project-based learning was quite new to the ESL industry. And when they came to inspect it, they didn't really know what to look for. They didn't know what was the right approach or what was the wrong approach. So we really had to educate the inspectors in that particular area. And it did come last year when we had our final inspection. And we achieved a very, very high grade in our inspection. And I suppose that is really the stamp of approval, because EQUALS only inspects and accredits English language schools. So at the end of the day, we're an English language school. We're not teaching technology. We're not teaching project-based learning. What we are teaching is English language. Only the methodology and the way that we teach is quite different. Now, over the years, we have had to critique that, and even everything down to the way that we've marketed the programs and the way that we sold them. So, for example, in the very first year, we just had 40 students on our summer programs. And then this year, that has developed into just under 4,000 students on all of our programs. So because in the start, we probably made the mistake where we focused too much on technology and too much on project-based learning, where the agents that we deal with, they weren't really there yet. They didn't really know how to sell it. And they were probably a little bit afraid of it as well. So it took us a lot of work and it took us a lot of time in order to be able to improve on our material, improve on our explanation to the agents, and to make sure that they explain our programs to the end user, which is the client.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, as many of the listeners know, I used to own a one-to-one iPad school, and one of the big challenges was selling the concept that we're not using paper, and we're not using paper-based textbooks, to agents and students. And it was very, very difficult for them to grasp and understand that. So how did you find it?
I found it challenging at the start. Me coming from a second-level industry, so high school industry, where I didn't have to deal with agents before that. My role as a summer center manager in two of the big schools that I worked with in Ireland for almost 10 years, my role was going in during the summer and running the centers. I was never involved in the marketing or the selling end. But when I created the school, I found that I had to go to the workshops, I had to go to the conferences. And then I realized after the first few, I was like, these people don't fully understand what I'm selling here. They think the students are learning web design or graphic design.
Right, right, yeah.
It was only after the first summer when we had some agents and some groups in with us that I realized we had to change our branding. We had to change the way that we sold and marketed the programs. And what we really had to do was we had to help the agents. We had to help them because they were the ones who were selling our programs. They were the ones standing up in front of a group of parents in Spain or Italy or France or Finland. And we had to provide them with the correct material. Like, what does project-based mean? What does technology-enhanced mean? What does content integration mean? How do we link that to the lessons, the afternoon activities to the lessons? So we put a lot of work and effort into that area, and we can really noticing it paying off now. But I also think that there's much more of an awareness around now. We've done a lot of research in this area where we see that agents and parents and students, they're looking for something different. They don't want general English. But the problem is they don't know what different is. They don't know what different means. So you have to put that argument together for them, and you have to prove that here's our concept of what different is, and then prove that this really is a good concept for your son or daughter to learn through. And that these skills that we teach, that they're not just focused on learning English language. Like, if you take our certificate, we have developed our certification. So I'll give you an example. If you look at the front of our certificate, it's a standard certificate. But if you turn it around on the back, you will see about 50 to 60 different areas that we examine and that we look for in the students. So they're broken down into the three areas of all of our programs, which are technology, collaboration, and language. And these are the three key skills that we try to teach in a lot of our programs as well, because these are the key skills that a lot of people are looking for now in the workplace. And these are the key skills that universities are telling us students are lacking in collaboration skills. They're lacking in their use of technology when they commit to university. And so these are the key skills that we're trying to teach all the time through our project-based approach. And we've done lots of other work in relation to project-based. So, for example, now this year in our mini-stay programs, we offer a range of projects to choose from. So before, we would have chosen the project for the students. But now we've given them a range of projects from future work to computational thinking and problem solving to Irish culture and history. And so there's a range there based on their language level and based on their age profile of what we see fit.
Now, how do you assess the skills of the student? Because one of the challenges I had when I introduced project-based learning was that teachers were often looking at the final product and saying, wow, they did a great project, and they would assess them on the project, on the final project. And I would argue with the teachers and say, that's not what you're assessing. You're assessing the process. So even if the project failed at the end, the how they got there, what they did, the process that they went through to make that project is more important than the final result. So how do you look at assessment?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. Well, first of all, the assessment starts with the introduction and with the level test. So we don't do a traditional level test. We have an oral test in groups from the start. And that's the way that we place our students in classes for summer programs. And it's first of all divided by age, 15 and younger and 15 and older. And then we have the oral test. But then the very first thing that we do, that we introduce the students to our certificate, in all of our classes in A2 size, inside the wall, we will have the back of the certificate displayed so that students know from day one, I'm not just being examined on language. I'm also being examined on technology and collaboration under headings such as information, communication, content creation, digital safety, and problem solving. Collaboration will be under shared understanding, planned problem solving, team organization, and within that, there are subheadings as well. So we get them to self-assess themselves on our certificate on day one. Halfway throughout the course, the teacher will then do another sit down with the student and see how they have progressed. And then at the end that they will get the final certification and they will be graded on all of those different headings. So it's not that at the very end of the course, we say, oh, here you go. By the way, you're being examined on technology and collaboration and language. So they know from the very start. But I guess this comes from, again, the very, very start where they signed up for our program in Spain or Italy or France. Did they know that they were not coming to a traditional course? They have to buy in to our assessment procedures as well. So I would say that in the first year or two, yes, we would have had a lot of people querying, you know, why are we doing this way? Why are we not giving them lots of writing and giving them lots of homework in the evening time? But now that we have people coming back to us, they've bought into our concept. And that's probably the most satisfactory thing to see, is to see people coming back, students coming back, people coming back with bigger groups as well. So that's very, very satisfactory. I will say it hasn't been easy. And what we like to do is we like to use the term that we're trying to educate the market. So we're trying to educate people on this process, exactly what you said there in your initial question. That it's not just about the end task, it's about the process of how they got there in the end.
Yeah, you know, it was very frustrating for me as well to go through that process of trying to educate the market. So I'm very happy David is out there and working on it as well. Now, one of the other challenges that we had was that students really didn't know how to use the technology. In our case, we were using iPads and one-to-one iPad scenarios. So they of course know how to use the social media and the texting and the gaming and all of that, but how to be productive with their technology was something that we spent a lot of time on teaching students. And what schools didn't realize, what agents and parents and our, you know, the ESL world didn't realize was that our students were using their devices more, but actually they were using Wi-Fi less. Isn't that interesting? So our Wi-Fi usage was actually going down because students were on their devices doing productive things with their devices. And have you found that as well in terms of how the students' knowledge walking in to your school?
Yes, it varies widely. And I suppose this is one of the areas that we would have focused on when I was the ICT coordinator in the secondary school in Ireland, is that with students and even with teachers, there's a perception out there that if you're a young teacher, that you're able to use technology. Yes, you might be able to use technology such as you said, social media, Instagram and Facebook and Snapchat and so on. But using technology as a teaching tool and being able to achieve learning outcomes is something quite different. And being able to use technology in the classroom as a student to achieve learning outcomes is also quite different. So what I would say is that I found that students adapt a lot quicker than teachers. And the students that we would have, we would be using, initially we started off using one-to-one devices. We then changed that to smartphones, and also we would provide the hardware for them, such as a laptop or desktop. So they would have, every student would have a desktop, laptop, and a one-to-one device, which is usually their smartphone. We did find that their levels did vary. So what we found is that, again, in order to achieve learning outcomes, such as to learn English, we had to scaffold the projects for them. So if you take ePortfolio, just as an example, we don't ask the students to come in and to create the whole website template, because that wouldn't be a good use of time, because they wouldn't be learning very much English then. They would then be focusing more on creating a template and messing around with colors and fonts and so on. So for the e-portfolio, we scaffold it for them. We give them the headings, the colors are in there. We give them the prompts, and then they have to go about filling in the content. So that's what we want them to focus on. If there's time at the end, for some of the students might move at a different pace than others, and this is where we all want to use technology in a productive way, so that it can allow different students at different levels to move at different paces. We do allow those students to move on, so they can create more content under the My Culture section, or they can add more video content from the afternoon section, from their afternoon activities, more photos. They can go into more detail, more in depth. So that's how we find the technology becomes a real productive tool in the classroom. And that's where we find that the technology is good for the different levels of students. But we do find, yes, that there is huge varying levels in students. Also, it depends on which country they come from as well. We find that that also has an impact on their ability to use technology in the classroom.
Well, which countries are stronger and which countries are weaker?
So, for example, we would get a lot of students from Finland. And you might say, Finland, wow, their English levels are quite good. The reason why they would be coming to us is because they don't want general English. They want project-based learning. They want to use technology in the classroom. Finland, for example, is moving to a fully digital curriculum. And they started training their teachers between 5 and 6 years ago. So we notice an impact when the teachers are trained and more efficient in using technology in classroom, then so are the students. We notice that we're also getting students from schools in Spain, for example. There's a lot of private schools in Spain now using one-to-one devices. And those particular students want to go on foreign programs during the summer. But they don't want to go again to traditional English language schools. So they're choosing a school like us. So we're noticing students like that that would have increased levels of use of technology in the classroom. I would say countries like France would have lower levels. Russia would have lower levels. We have Chinese students who have varying levels, coming with different levels from the larger cities compared to the second and third tier cities that we would sometimes get. So, linked with that, with China, while I mentioned that, we have started to run winter programs in China where our teachers will fly there in January during Chinese New Year. And we run the same concept as a summer program, but our teachers will fly there and they will bring, we will bring 15 to 20 teachers and they will run the project-based technology enhanced course that we run here in Ireland and the UK during summertime. So we're noticing that places like that have definitely an increased interest in this type of learning. And in the areas that we work with, which is more so in the Shenzhen South area near Hong Kong, they're also introducing the classroom of the future. So I was there recently and a lot of the schools are now introducing one, two or three classrooms, which are aligned to what they call classroom of the future. So those type of areas and those type of people are the ones that we notice that have got better and increased uses of technology in classroom.
Now, I'm very curious because on my podcast, I've attacked France a lot because they're banning the mobile phones and all of the their devices. So, you know, it saddens me to hear when you say, you know, that the students from France are just not, you know, capable in use of the technology. And I think it goes back to the French government's decision to stop using technology. Now, here in Canada and North America as well, generally, a lot of schools are going what's called no tech. So they're just taking out the devices from their classes. And it's really making me crazy, David, really, really, truly. So what say you to those people out there who are thinking, we got to take out all the technology, get back to them studying on pens and paper?
I'm a firm believer that if you don't buy into technology, don't do it. I would much prefer to see a school fully invested in technology and doing it right. I would not like to see another competitor school introduce iPads for the sake of introducing it and not training their staff, not having the correct infrastructure in their building, not having the correct hardware. Because I've seen it so many times here in Ireland. I've seen schools put the pressure on parents to buy one-to-one devices, whether it's iPads or Surfaces or Samsung Tabs, whatever it might be. But then they ask the parents to buy them, and then the school does not have the correct infrastructure. They do not have full-time ICT people, and I mean on the pedagogical side and on the technical side, because they're two very different roles. And then you ask the parents of the students to buy ebooks, and then they don't go down the road of creating content themselves and moving away from ebooks. They don't have the whole school approach to introducing technology. And then what happens at the end of the day, 2 or 3 years down the line, it's the technology that gets a bad name. The parents are saying, oh, the technology doesn't work, and my son or daughter is not learning. You need to have a whole school approach or a whole country approach, whatever it might be. So I would actually admire someone that, if they're not prepared to fully invest in this approach, if you want to be called a technology-enhanced school, don't do it if you don't have a vision. They say it takes 5 to 7 years to implement technology fully into any institution. And if you don't have that vision and if you're not fully invested in it, then I wouldn't go down that route. I would much prefer to see a school using zero tech than using tech for the sake of using tech. And I've noticed that a lot because I've visited lots of schools in Ireland. We've done lots of teacher training here in Ireland where we go into schools and we help them to get the most out of making use of technology in the classroom. And you have to be fully, invested in that. Like, for example, if the school wants to do teacher training, I see so many schools doing it for 2 hours in August or September for the return at the start of the year, and they're fully energetic. And that's it, nothing else after that. If you want to implement technology, you need to be doing it on a consistent basis. You need to be training your staff. You need to have champion people in your school. But I have failed to see that on a countrywide basis or on a constituent-wide basis here in Ireland just yet. And it saddens me.
Yeah, very well spoken. Very well spoken, David. Now, I just want to go back to a point that you were talking about sort of in the classroom, where you have students who are at a higher level than other students. And what I saw with teachers was they would put the strong student with the weaker student and say, oh, I want the stronger student to teach the weaker student. And I would say, no, that's not what you want to do. You want to put the strong students together and watch them, you know, develop and grow and experiment and app smash and do all these amazing things. And the weaker ones, as a teacher, you would kind of help them along in getting to know the technology. What do you think about that philosophy?
Mm-hmm. Are you talking about ESL or in ESL? Okay, yeah. I would agree with having the higher level student with the lower level student and possibly someone in between.
Sorry, I'm not just talking about the language, but the use, the ability to use the technology.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm also referring
to
technology as well. Again, collaboration is a key word here. And if we're trying to teach collaboration skills, you got to be able to share your knowledge. So we are very open in our school. We don't hide anything. We prefer to see other people using technology in the way that's going to be most advantageous to them and their students. And we have that approach in the classroom as well. So I would much prefer to see a more advanced student working with a lower level student. One of the programs that we offer on our mini stays is an integration with local students. So let's say, for example, you have got 15 students coming from Italy, and we would then have 7 or 8 local Irish students. So the idea is there that the local Irish students, number one, would encourage them to speak English, and number two, would also help them with the technology, because it's not very easy for a student who's non-native to use an English computer as well, if it's the first or second time that they've used it. So we find that the local students really help the foreign students, those who have got lower technical ability. But going back to your question, yes, I'm very much in favor to share the knowledge and have different abilities. Now, it mightn't be working together for the week, but it could be at least helping them for an hour or two, moving on to a different group and then rotating it.
Yeah, now one of the issues that we had was that some of the students were amazing and they were really great, and teachers, or they would adapt quickly, faster. They would pick up the technology faster and be ready to move on. And one of the issues that I had was the teachers were a bit afraid, because they felt that they had to know everything about what the students were doing or what the students were planning to do. My advice to teachers was, let the students teach you. I mean, if they're that far ahead, you know, that's how I learned more sometimes from the students. So what do you tell your teachers who may be, or any teachers out there listening, who may be, you know, feeling a bit afraid? I don't know all the technology. I don't know all the stuff. The students know it better than I do. What would you say to those teachers?
I would say don't be afraid. 100%. Do not be afraid. If there is a student that is moving at a faster pace, I think that has to be looked at as a positive thing. It means that they're encouraged and that they are interested and that they want to move at a faster pace. It's impossible for us to know nowadays every piece of technology, every piece of single software that's out there. It's going to be the case that students are going to come in and they are going to move at a faster pace. We just got to accept that. And if you can utilize the skills of those students, use that. Get them to present to the class. Get them to present to the rest of the students. Get them to present to you and admit that you don't fully understand what they're doing. You still have to be. We know that the role of the teacher is very much changing. We're all familiar with the word facilitator. So you have to be able to think on your feet. So if it means that a student is moving faster and doing something like that you've never seen in your class, say, would you mind getting up and presenting that to the rest of my class? Would you mind sharing your knowledge with everyone else? And I think that's a great thing in any particular class. Now, I will say, we don't see it all the time. And one of the problems, of course, is when the company and your business grows, getting teachers with a particular skill set that we're looking for, and I'm sure in your school that you were looking for, you're not just looking for English language teachers. You're looking for teachers who have got qualifications in technology and learning or computer science, or people who've got a genuine interest in working with technology as well. So we do look for a specific type of teacher. And I suppose that does pay off when it comes to having students that have more advanced levels of technology. And these are things that anyone going down the road of opening a technology enhanced or project-based learning school, is these are all things that they have to consider. And you have to factor in teacher training on a regular basis as well. As we say, there's many, many cogs in the wheel to make this particular thing turn.
Okay, now final question, David. School administrators or teachers, they're out there listening and they're saying, you know, I need to kind of show or prove that this will work in our school to try to get the cogs, the wheels rolling here. So if they're thinking about doing project-based learning, how would you suggest that they get started?
Good question. So first of all, you need to have a vision, like I said earlier. You need to have a vision of where do you want this to go. And with project-based learning and technology go hand in hand. So if you want to get started with it, there's a few simple things that you need to think of. Is you need to have, you know, good lesson plans, good objectives and aims for all of your lessons. You need to have the right type of learning facility as well. Flexible furniture is really important. Icebreakers. If you're getting students to work together in project-based learning, you need to be able to introduce them as well. So depending if they're coming from different backgrounds or if they know each other already, you need to have different tactics. There's lots of really, really good material out there on the internet. Lots of good videos there that can help people when it comes to project-based learning. But I would say that if you're going down the route of project-based learning, it's an exciting way to teach. You know, it's a really, really exciting way to teach. You're gonna get a different buzz off your students than you do if you come in and have your typical didactic lessons. But having the right type of facilities, the right type of technology, having a vision, and doing your research, you know, you make sure that, you know, the students that are coming into this course know what they're doing. The agents that you're working with know exactly what they're buying into as well, and have some good material to share with the students as well. And with project-based learning, get the students to present their work. Students love presenting their work. Get them to showcase their work, and try and, if you can, even keep them engaged when they're gone. This is one thing that we have and are continuously working on, trying to keep our students engaged by sharing all of the content that they create them when they're with us as well. So if a teacher comes with them, make sure that project base continues when they go back to Spain or France or Italy or Finland or wherever it might be.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely. And I would suggest to the teachers, you know, as David said, even just a small little project to help you understand what it can do, it would be very helpful. So get started, teachers out there. Please. And it is revolutionary. It is revolutionary. It'll change your teaching style. So thank you, David, for joining us today. Much, much appreciated.
Thanks for having me, James.
Have you subscribed to James's newsletter? When you subscribe, you will receive a free Study It ESL textbook. Visit www.thejamesriceshow.com for more information and join today.
All right, welcome back. And I am getting that finger pointing from Stephanie, like, you are a bad, bad podcast host. I know, Stephanie. You know, we said we would keep the podcast to about 40, 45 minutes, and we're well over that this week. And Stephanie's giving me trouble. I know, but, you know, I'm talking to David here from Ireland, and it was so exciting to talk to David because, of course, as many of you know, I had a one-to-one iPad school in Toronto. We started that up and I sold that to an American company. And it was exciting to run that program to try and get it off the ground. And I really feel for what David's trying to do in Ireland there and the struggles that he's having trying to get it off the ground. And it's a new concept. It's different. But, you know, to me, it's not that different. It's very exciting. I hear what he's doing, but, you know, it's still frustrating out there for me to hear the struggles that he's having because, you know, we've done that already. We've tried to explain to language travel agents. We've tried to explain to students. We've tried to explain to parents the value of it, and he sees it. And it sounds like his school's doing a great job with it. So I'm excited that there are more people out there trying it. And he's having some success with it, and we wish him all the best. All right, so that's Stephanie saying, cut, James, cut. I know, all right, I will. Thank you guys so much for tuning in this week. Always great to hear from you. Don't forget to contact us on Facebook. Send us your messages. Send us your notes. Tell us what you're thinking, what you're feeling out there, what you want to hear on The James Rice Show. We love to hear from our listeners. And Stephanie's playing the music. Okay, Stephanie, I'm getting off now. All right, remember, everybody, remember, be crazy.
Thanks for listening to The James Rice Show. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter and send us your questions or comments at www.thejamesriceshow.com.